Yeah. Oh, now I see the
There it
button.
is. Okay, perfect.
So let's call the meeting to order. Welcome,
Oops.
everybody. Ready? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome, everybody.
Oh, we do have attendees from Oleg. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, we do. All of a sudden, they showed up. Start over. It is 7:03 p.m. on Wednesday, September 30th. Our first meeting tonight is a special meeting of the Kensington Fire Protection District Board of Directors. We'll then move to resume our adjourned meeting from September 9th. But I will go ahead and convene the special meeting, call that meeting to order, starting by taking roll. So I am here, Julie Stein, Vice President Padian.
Present.
Director Domer.
Here.
We're told Director Kosel would not be in attendance for this first meeting, and Director Nagel.
Is here.
And we are joined by our Interim General Manager, Mary Morris Mayorga, and our Fire Chief, Michael Pagoni, and 10 members of the public. So we'll start this special meeting with oral communications. And because this first 15 minutes is a special meeting, oral communications are limited to items that are actually on this agenda, which is a very brief agenda to discuss and hopefully approve a supplemental transmittal report. So let me ask the board members if you have any comments about our agenda item for the first 15 minutes.
I have a couple things. I lost the picture. I think I did that all by myself. I had an operation last week that's kind of kept me from sitting still very often. And so if I come and go, that's just the way I am tonight.
Sounds good, Don. No problem there. It's happened to all of us at one point or another. Thanks, Don. Let's see. Who's next?
I have just one question. If it's
muted.
I think you're muted.
You're muted, Kevin.
Yeah, then I'm muted. I'm sorry. The under number two, oral communications, it says that speakers should be required to provide their names and addresses. But at the 7:15 reconvene, it says speakers should be requested. I was under the impression that no one is ever required. Is that a mistake on my part?
That's how we've had it for special meetings and not for the regular meetings, which is why the two are different. And that's historically how it's been. I don't know that typically we get comments on the special meeting.
This is a template that our attorney provided for us a year ago. Doesn't mean that we can't look into it.
Sure.
I'm just concerned because I thought that legally you couldn't require, of course, if the attorney says it, then, you know, but maybe a quick check. I don't
sure,
know.
Sure, absolutely.
Sorry.
No problem.
Mary, any comment from you on the item on our agenda tonight?
No, I made a note on there. We just need the July invoice for BHI approved. The August has been approved, so this one was just omitted, and we have a couple of new invoices that we'd like to get taken care of at the same time.
And how about you, Larry?
No questions.
Okay. All right, then. So let's go to see if anyone from the public has a question or a comment about the item on our special meeting.
I don't see any hands.
So, okay then. Mary, I know you sent this out to us. I think there's only three items on it. Maybe just quickly walk us through the three items in case those on the phone, the board members might not have seen it.
Oh, on the supplemental, the transmittal?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so we have the BHI consulting invoice, and that was the one that is from July. We've already approved the August, so we just need to get this July paid. It was omitted from the August transmittal. The Everbridge is the NICSL annual renewal. And then we have a correction on a reimbursement. It was for Director Stein, where we had submitted documentation to the county to adjust the reimbursement to 9108, and they paid 90. So we just need the correction through this update. So it's a total of $8,300.
Hopefully that's just for audit purposes. People busy over a dollar makes sense. So, all right, fine. Do I have a motion on the transmittal?
Move to approve.
Do I have a second?
Second.
I think Don got there first.
I think so.
Any discussion among the board members?
I just had one question. I don't see nothing wrong with this, but I'm curious why we had to call a special meeting for what looks like fairly routine things that could have been handled at the next regular meeting.
So
are we in a crisis mode here, or?
We were having this meeting tonight, so we just put the special meeting on the beginning part of it because the next meeting isn't until October and the BHI is not a typical invoice. So it would come to the board. It would delay it further because it already takes us a little bit to get it through the county. So we just wanted to get it through now.
Okay.
And I mean, maybe it's an opportunity to clarify. I don't want to be out of order, but I think some people were a little bit confused about our adjourned meeting. So what happens at 7:15 is that we're effectively picking up where we left off September 9th. It's like we had a really long lunch break, but we couldn't put any new agenda items on the adjourn meeting because you essentially just pick up where you left off. So we had this happen last October, where we resumed an adjourned meeting, but we had a couple of new things that it was an opportune time to deal with them. So this was how our attorney showed us how to set it up to just kind of make it back to back, deal with the new things in a special meeting, adjourn that meeting, and then go back to the where you left off at the meeting. So I was gonna say that.
This is the legal and proper way of adding an agenda item to a continued meeting.
Yeah, effectively, would you say?
Yes.
Yeah. All right, so that helped us use a little bit of our time till 7:15. And do we have any public comment on the item that we're voting on, which is our supplemental transmittal to pay three items that need to get paid? Pardon me? I don't see any either. All right, so I'll call the vote.
I do have one.
Oh, okay.
Gail? All right, Gail? Did you have a question?
I do. It's a question. I'm not seeing any of the backup materials for your agenda on your website.
For the special meeting?
For either of those meetings. For the meeting that's happening today. So are you saying that the materials for tonight, for the supplemental, I don't see those listed. And then are all the materials from your continued meeting then referred back to that?
Let's ask Mary whether the supplemental transmittal is on the website, and then when we move to our adjourned meeting, we could talk about the materials that we're going to start addressing from 7:15 onward.
Okay, so yes, the transmittal's in the board packet that's on the special meeting announcement on the website, and along with all of the rest of the materials.
Okay. Anybody else? All right, then. I will call the vote on the motion. So I'm in favor. Kevin?
Yes.
Don?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Okay. The supplemental transmittal is approved, and we have to wait 2 minutes, according to the clock on my computer, to start the next meeting. So we will adjourn our special meeting and just kind of wait 2 minutes.
We don't have to log back on, right?
No.
One continuous meeting. All right, looks like we can, it's 7:15 on my clock, my computer, my phone, everything I can see. So I think that, Janice has her hand up. She may need to be.
Oh, okay. Yes, let's see. Here we go. All right. She's a panelist.
I see her.
There you go. Unmuted. Yes.
I'm sorry I'm late, but I told Mary I couldn't meet tonight, so I just got through with my earlier meeting. I got a phone call at 5:45 from one of our residents saying that this meeting was not noticed on the
board. Janice, would you mind? We haven't actually convened the meeting. I was okay. About to do that, and then definitely we can hear from you. So it is 7:16 p.m. on Wednesday, September 30th. This is essentially a reconvenement of an adjourned meeting of the Kensington Fire Protection District Board of Directors. We are reconvening the adjourned meeting from September 9th, 2020, at which we did not finish our agenda. I will call this meeting to order. I am present. Julie Stein, Kevin Padian.
Present.
Don Domer.
Yes.
Janice Kosel.
Yes.
Larry Nagel.
Here.
All right. So we will move to oral communications for items that are not on the agenda. And I will start with the board members. If you don't mind, I'll stick with alphabetical order like we've been doing because it just seems to flow smoothly. Don, any comments?
No.
Janice.
Yes, I got a phone call from one of our residents at 5:45 today telling me that the agenda was not posted at the public safety building and questioning why not and whether that impaired the legality of this meeting.
So for this meeting, the timing was short and I was intending to ask them to post that because I couldn't get the admin person to be able to post there, that cabinet's locked and we didn't get the person there in time and I wasn't able to request that. Normally we always do that, but it doesn't impair because the agenda was posted in two other places and it just needs to be posted in one.
Okay.
And we did all electronic as well, Nextdoor, mailing out, so yeah.
It was posted more than 48 hours early on the two kiosks.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else, Janice?
I have another question. So
okay, let's just see if Janice is finished.
Oh, sorry.
I'll move on to you. Anything else, Janice?
Nope.
Okay, Larry, go for it.
Yeah, usually in a meeting, somewhere along the line, we adopt the agenda, and I don't see that as an agenda item. And I'm wondering, is this the right place to bring up the agenda, or are you going to do that elsewhere?
So, Larry, this board has never actually done that I am aware of, to ask for a motion to approve the agenda. I see it on lots of other governing bodies, and I think it's a great idea.
I think it's in the Sturgis book, so if we maybe we should start doing that. But
I was going to propose it. I mean, I think it would be a policy change that would have to come back, and we probably shouldn't be discussing that now, really substantively. But
okay, well, I would just like to make the comment that I personally consider the items on this agenda having to do with emergency preparedness, and in particular evacuation, to be of utmost importance. And I want us to do something to make sure that we have time to address those. Now, it doesn't say anywhere how long this meeting is going to last. And if it's okay for the meeting to go to 2 a.m, then I'm fine. We started at 7. We can, I think, I don't know whether we have to stop at 10 or not. If we do, but I would, whatever the board feels is the best way of handling this, I want to make sure that we do these emergency preparation committee agenda items. The other items, in my opinion only, are not as important and could easily be postponed until the October meeting on October 16th or whatever it is. But I want to make sure, and I know that we have a large attendance by the public, and I believe that most of them are also concerned with the fire season that we're going through and emergency preparation. So I hope we can accommodate that, whether we put time limits on the other items or we do the emergency items first. And then if we run out of time, we run out of time or whatever. But I don't really want to avoid the situation where we don't get to the emergency preparation committee items once again because we don't have time. That's my comment.
I'll just respond. Who's next? Kevin, go for it. Remember, this is items not on the agenda.
Yeah, well, the agenda is not on the agenda.
Understand, Larry. Kevin, please.
I would agree with Larry. I don't care whether we put limitations on discussion times of other items. But you know, we haven't talked about these sorts of things since June, and we're in a very difficult fire season right now. And we get a lot of questions, and we've got a lot done. And I hope that we could figure something, either put a time limit on the other items, or move them. I do want to handle everything. I think it's all important.
There is only one item ahead of you, and that's 7.6. Do I have that right? Yeah.
No, there are three.
Right. 7.5. It's about the public safety building and where we are with that. I don't think it's a long item, and I would not give up having to wait 3 hours just to save you a little bit on the other end.
Okay. Let's see. How to make a comment without commenting about the agenda. I've seen precedent for board members making a motion to take the agenda out of order, and it seems to me that could be welcome. I'd like to suggest, if that's going to happen, that it be done after we go to communications from the public, because we do have a lot of folks on the line who may be wanting to say something. And I'm just going to leave it at that because I could make comments on the agenda items, but I don't think that's what we're supposed to be doing at this part of the meeting. So again, public comment. So I will remind everybody that we do have a board policy that allows us to limit each agenda item to 20 minutes. Sometimes it's hard for me to both chair the meeting and time the items at the same time. But I would welcome any other board member who wants to kind of pitch in and help me out with that to set the timers on their phone for 20 minutes per item. And we can certainly do that. And we do want the public, according to our policy, they're allowed to have 5 minutes. I hope that people will observe 2 minutes because we do have a long meeting ahead of us. So with that, I will turn it to the public, and Mary, you can just help me out and see who may be raising their hands.
I don't see any yet.
Nor do I. All right then, I think everyone's had a fair opportunity to raise their hand. So, I'm prepared to move to item 7.5 unless any member of the board wants to make a motion to change the order of the agenda.
Yeah, I would like to make the motion that we consider all of the items in 7.8 beforehand, and then we do 7.5, and then we do 7.6, and then we do 7.7.
7.5 and then 7.7.
So in other words, we do the emergency preparation agenda item 7.8, all of them first. Then we do 7.5, the public safety building financing. Then we do 7.6, something about the general manager to negotiate a lease. Oh, we're not doing 7.6. I apologize. And then we do 7.7, having something to do with the checking account.
So the motion is 7.8, 7.5, and then 7.7.
Correct.
Do I have a second?
Okay.
All right then. Let's kick off 7.5.
Could I ask about the time to spend on these? Don, how long do you think it will take to get through these other two things? If we said an hour, would that be enough?
It's a big thing, but I think there's a single issue about this. And so I would expect some comments, but I can see this getting done in a half an hour.
All right, so I'm gonna, before we start talking about 7.5, I'm going to set my timer. Is everybody okay with me setting it at 30 minutes, or do you want me to stick to 20?
That's fine.
Let's start with 30, please.
Okay, there it goes. For the public safety building, item 7.5, financing and decision plan action with supporting material that has been updated since September 9th. So, Mary, would you like to kind of first, I think it's important to sort of know what we are going to be voting on. And would you like to kick off the item?
Yes. Yes. So this is the public safety building renovation potential shared financing decision plan and draft proposal for the board's discussion. So this is where I've been bringing updates on the public safety building. This particular item, we're looking at a potential process for financing, which would be looking at district financing, whether to pay from reserves, look at any outside financing, and to look at the process for potentially if the board ends up voting to offer occupancy to the police protection district. If that moves forward, that we have a process in place to be able to do that. So it's not any decision on the actual building renovation design. I've included some updated documents just to provide an update of where we are with all of that, and I'll be going through it. So would you like me to continue?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, so RDC is the architect. They've been in the process of seeking a determination by the county on the conceptual design for the potential public safety building renovation. While we don't have it officially notified in writing, we have verbal confirmation from the staff that they do expect that an elevator will be required in the design. So that changes options a little bit. The design they had been reviewing contained no elevator and it had the balcony enclosed. What we would need to consider now is if the elevator is required, what does that impact the design? How does that impact the design given that now the balcony would still be enclosed? So RDC has provided an updated draft design. We're still reviewing that on both sides because, of course, RDC has an agreement for both agencies with both agencies. So both agencies are still in the process of reviewing those conceptual updates. I've already been in touch with the fire chief and there are a lot of areas that need to be looked at. I provided that to the architect. So they'll be looking at how to approach any revisions on our side. And I know the Police Protection District is still on in process with that on their side. So there's no decision. It's just to show what kind of changes that that elevator requirement would be and that there are some options for the actual positioning of the location of the elevator. So the interim general managers from both agencies, we've been discussing along the way the potential financing if the shared occupancy works out. And what that would entail, and I've got a chart included. But I kind of want to go over the schedule. It's now shifted a little bit because we're meeting later than our initial regular meeting. So some of the dates I had provided to kind of give an overall decision process, project plan, dates, timeline, they've shifted, so we need to kind of move accordingly. So determination of financing, we're still in progress with that. So we're kind of on schedule with this meeting being included. We would have then the potential for continued discussion or information being brought back depending upon board direction at the October meeting. We hoped to get a final conceptual design in September. We're not quite there yet. So I expect that'll be coming hopefully within the next week or so. Then we would have presentation to both boards. We're anticipating potentially a joint meeting to be able to present that. I still need to work out details with the Police Protection District, with the interim general manager there, but that's a potential where RDC, given that they're working on the design for both agencies, could do that to at least provide the design concept to both. It's obviously not going to be this week. That'll be at a later point in time. Hopefully in early October, early to mid-October. Then at whatever point, both agencies have individually been able to have their review of the design, then this board would, and theirs obviously, of course, as well, would need to consider whether they wanted to pursue the joint occupancy if the designs are feasible on both sides. But that, those are a lot of ifs. But this is just a schedule on, you know, what could happen. And of course, when decisions are made one way or the other, it may change the schedule.
Mary, is that yes. schedule you're reading from available anywhere?
It's on the staff report. It starts on the bottom of the first page, the design decision process and project plan.
Mm-hmm. It was in the original board packet, Larry, from September 9th. The first page of the
September 9, yeah.
Item 7.5.
So that one's online.
This is from the meeting of September 9th?
Yeah.
Yes. It was also included in this packet, but that's where it started.
I can't find it in this packet.
Okay. I can share my screen.
Can
That's okay. If it's in the last packet, I've got that. I just have to,
okay.
It's labeled 7.5. Because there's too many numbers and dates here for me to keep all that in my
head. Yes, 7.5.
While Larry's looking for it, can I ask you a question, Mary?
Certainly.
I'm looking at the second page of that report, and what the Community Services District is proposing is to pay about 15% of the cost over 15 years, no immediate contribution to construction costs. How did you decide 15%? Is that their percentage occupancy of the building?
So this is the proposal just based on estimate of space, which actually has been updated a little bit. You'll see that on another page that I'll go over next. But this is where the engineer has assessed the actual space that would be occupied by that plan, and it could shift depending upon how the design changes with the elevator. But that would be based on their percentage of occupancy. So that would be the allocated cost. But again, we still have to go through the process of demonstrating that, you know, they'd actually have to discuss it at their meeting to be able to determine what they could do. I'm under the impression that they don't have funds available for a full upfront contribution, but I don't know if there are any for part of it. We're still in discussions on the rest of that, but this is what it would look like if we were to call it a lease payment, an amortized loan payment, something along those lines. And again, that cost was updated on a next page.
And then we would contemplate that they would also get 15% of the parking lot?
I'm not sure about the parking, how that works. I'm not sure about the division of that.
Let me just ask, Larry, have you found the materials?
That looks like the MAC 5 report. Is that correct? Is that what you
read?
It's right ahead of that.
Yeah, right ahead of it.
It has a MAC 5 letterhead on it. A conceptual cost plan?
No, it's the document right before that, Larry.
It's on letterhead. It says to Board of Directors, September 9th.
It's on our letterhead.
Right. Did I say it? I don't know if I said something different, but.
You just said letterhead.
Okay. I meant our letterhead.
Okay. I found it.
Oh, okay. Good. Thank you.
So maybe, Mary, could you just maybe let's make sure you get through your introduction. And then we could go to questions.
Okay.
Because it's getting a deep dive in a sense.
But could I just add one comment? That the area was taken off just recently by the architects using a sort of standard development kind of way in which you include certain walls in and certain walls out. So it should be pretty good shape.
I had one other follow-up question. The last plans I saw, there was two. There was a plan A and a plan B. Is the elevator required for both plan A and plan B?
So I believe it would be required in both cases. We didn't proceed with plan A going to the county. The board opted to take plan B, option B, to the county for evaluation. I'm not clear if that went to the county previously. I can follow up on that.
Well, the county, to your knowledge, the county has only told us that we have to have an elevator for plan B, and we may or may not need one for plan A. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
And Don may have other information, but I also do want to say that in discussing it with the architect, if for some reason the district had a plan approved that didn't have an elevator because maybe the county agreed that it wasn't required, that there would still be the potential for a suit to be filed at a later point in time. an ADA suit with access to the building, regarding access to the building. So the district would still be at risk with that.
I understand that the elevator would be in any scheme that we do if they so go that way. In other words, one is, but they're both included.
So Mary, why don't you, or maybe you are finished with what you wanted to walk us through?
Not quite.
Okay.
Let me take a couple more steps. Okay, so we got to the point where, you know, if we had the boards either at a joint meeting or their own meeting, about just have a presentation by the architect of the design, once we have a chance for both the police and fire to and have their desired revisions incorporated. Then each board would hold their own meeting, and I threw some dates out here, which it could potentially happen, but again, I said the schedule has changed, so those dates would shift a little bit. But then the boards could discuss the potential for joint occupancy and determine where to go with that, whether they're prepared to make a decision or whether they need more information. Then the rest of the project, once we get into schedule, for construction, drawings and plans and bids and actual project completion, we're told that that project would be about a 22-month project duration. So it's just to kind of give time frame on that. I kind of went over the construction and temporary space, though I have an update on a further page, but it's to give an idea of the magnitude of cost of the project and the allocated space. We have an update on the allocated space on the other page, and then to give an example of an amortized payment over 15 years, which would be, as I said, in a form of a lease component or loan, something along those lines to be paid back. Then I had provided the reserves and a schedule that we've also updated on what the potential outflow of cash for the project would do to reserves. And there are some options. The district would still have reserves, but there are options for potentially looking at external financing, and I've included some information on that as well. So on the updates, as I discussed, the MAC-5 actually provided, and that's the additional document that's in this package, a project budget. They had given me an estimate of the soft costs previously, which I used, but when they got to the full project budget, the amount is higher, and I did want to report that. These are draft. We anticipate with some of this, we have a larger project contingency here, so I'm not really sure what to expect with that, but this is what they provided thus far, and kind of the cash outflow, how it works out now, that would be on the next page. And then
I'm sorry, on the next page of which document?
And so this is the 7.5, that was my safe staff report. Then on the next page, it's an additional item, the public safety building renovation.
They're not of the September 9th agenda. Is that what you
No. Mean? Yes, this is a supplemental.
Okay.
And this was in that supplemental package that I sent separately, if that helps. So in the updated potential cost for the Police Protection District, and as I said, that's what MAC-5 provided us. That's not pursuant to any potential shifts that occur with the revised conceptual plan drawings, but the total estimate increased a little bit to $1.2 million, which would then change a potential amortized payment. And as I said, there could be options for how that would be funded.
Mary, would it work out for you to share your screen, to show us?
Sure.
Referring to, I think I'm keeping up for the most part, but for those who don't have it all printed out, it might be a little bit difficult.
Okay, let me see. Let me get on that screen. I'm going to share this one.
So just so everybody knows, we're 13 minutes and 42 seconds left.
Okay, so can you see the screen?
I can.
Okay, great.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, so this is that updated page where I was talking about. So the project cost obviously is higher. We expect that there could be some adjustment downward. I still need to find out how the construction plays out with the 50% limit. So this is just the most updated cost we have. It's not final. It's a draft project budget that they put together for us. And all of the documentation is provided following. I'll get to that in a second. So then I updated the project cost outflow potential and what that would do to reserves. So I've highlighted where those outflows are, and then a potential with operating reserves being higher, there is a potential that the district could offset capital reserves with operating reserves. But that's obviously a board decision. We'd still have the reserves for the contract, but we do have some potential financing options with the through the CSDA. They have a financing program, and they provided some quote information just for us to be able to look at. I just said, what if we needed $2 million to get some idea of what that would look like? Their rates are fairly low. So that may be something that the board wants to consider once we have a final project cost. And I think the process is pretty easily. They do say that they have funding within 60 days. So it doesn't take a long time to get that funding in place if we decide that we'd like to pursue that. So then the detailed budget is in the MAC 5 document showing all of the components that make up that $7.9 million. Including the contingency. And then the updated draft design, as I said, it's a conceptual draft update really to show the position options for the elevator. We're still looking at space to see what we can do as far as concerns with the design on the police and fire side. So this is just to show what it would look like with the elevator positions, not to decide on a final design yet. And then the next document was already in there. There's a lot of information, detailed project information that was updated in July, but the other is more current. So with that, I've overviewed the project, the most current information on the project. So what, as I said, what I was looking for tonight was to see when we talk about financing, as we, you know, have talked about a little bit, you know, as far as an upfront payment or versus an over time payment, what we'd be looking at. And so I'm looking for direction, and it's not to be considered final at this point. So it would be, you know, what is the board's direction on, you know, do we want to put something in writing to and this would be kind of a potential as to whether or not the design works out for both agencies, but what would the expectation be for any kind of a payment over time or an upfront payment and how that would look. So really this is not for decision on the design or the concept or the project itself. It's to kind of evaluate financing options and provide further direction. And with that, that's my overview. If you want me to stop sharing or continue, I can do that.
Why don't you keep sharing and let's do a couple of rounds of board comments and questions. This is a lot of new information for us. Yeah. And I'll just kind of go in alphabetical order as we've been doing. So Don, your first comments, questions.
I think she's done a good job. I see a couple things that need to be corrected. And I said, told her that we'd have to take a look at that. But otherwise, you know, things always cost more than you want, but I think we have a good handle on where we are.
All right, Janice.
I have a couple concerns. with the other district making no immediate contribution to construction costs, it looks like in 2023, our unallocated reserves dropped to $100,000. And that's before we factor in all the administrative costs that the Emergency Preparedness Committee is asking for tonight. Our administrative costs so far in the last 11 months are up 400% over the previous year. It looks like there's no reason to believe they're going down. So I don't think that's been factored into your statement. So I believe we would exhaust all of our reserves were the other district not to pay anything. In addition, I have a concern because I think the other district is insolvent in a bankruptcy sense, that their assets are less than their liabilities. And that means that it would be possible that for them to file a reorganization bankruptcy and reject all future obligations at will without our agreement after we have prepared a police station designed for them and not for us. So I guess I'm very much opposed to them not making a significant contribution at the outset.
All right, Mary, did you wanna make any response or clarification, or should I move on to the next board member?
I'll just respond that, you know, that's exactly what I'm looking for, are concerns, areas that I can collect more information. And I'm not clear that they don't have any money to pay upfront. I just know that they don't have any money to pay the full contribution of what we might want. So I will definitely include that. And then for any concern about future obligations, we would definitely check in with legal counsel. So I have that note.
Yeah, and I'm still not committed to a joint building, so I don't want my comments interpreted that way, but to the extent the majority goes for a joint building, those would be my big concerns.
I understand completely.
And also that we would require taking back a significant portion of the parking lot because we would have so many employees.
Larry.
Yeah, I guess my comment is just that I think this is very premature. We haven't decided on a building design yet. We don't know if the county is going to let us pursue our building design. We have no idea how much it's going to cost. And yet we're trying to figure out how we're going to pay for it. I just think this whole consideration of financing at this point in time is premature.
Okay. Thanks, Larry. Kevin.
Well, did Mary want to respond to what Larry said?
Yes. And as I said, this is to collect feedback, to provide further direction. So, you know, we just want to be prepared for when those items come back so that I have information to be able to provide. So it is early in the process, but I wanted to keep moving on this project to the extent that I could.
Yeah, I guess it's not clear to me exactly what you want us to do tonight. Is this just for our information?
Well, I was looking for feedback on the process. So I've been getting that direction from your concerns that you're reporting, so I can incorporate that into the next round and we can bring this back in October. So that's exactly what I'm getting. So I'm looking for that direction and that's what I'm getting. And I wanted to provide an update.
Okay.
All right, Kevin?
Thank you, Julie. Thanks for all the work on this, Mary. I know it's a lot. Several things here. First of all, I'm not sure about the police district's finances, although Chris Deppe has had his hand up, so I'm sure he'll tell us when it comes to that. But the thing for me is that if that district cannot afford to provide much of a lump sum payment to start out with. And if they cannot borrow it, then I would recommend crafting a lease similar to how you've done, but make it perhaps a 15-year fixed lease. If you're in, you're in for 15 years. And if the police, for whatever reason, left a building that was jointly inhabited, then they would have to find us another tenant that we accepted, presumably do the same thing or a similar thing, or they would be on the hook for it, because I think that we could, we probably not want to absorb the cost of that farther along in the process. But those things I'm sure you can work out with everybody. The second thing is that I would like to hope that there would be some financial advice on this project that's external. Reason being that money is very cheap right now to borrow. And if our reserves are earning 3%, a loan given by CSDA for less than 3% actually means that we make money by borrowing. I mean, I know it's a wash altogether, and we are paying overall more because of our interest costs. But really, as inflation increases, you're going to be eating up some of that cost. And so I don't know how you got the $2 million figure. It's a good one to start with, but I would think it would be much better borrowing $4 million because it would give us more in reserves. It would leave more. I think Janice is exactly right. We don't want to deplete the reserves that much. We could have a huge disaster come through Kensington tomorrow, and we would be faced with an awful lot of expenses. And having something in the reserves and not having to wait 60 days for a loan or waiting for FEMA to come would be a huge relief. And I think that we should just check. I'm not a financial expert, but I think that we do need external financial advice to counsel us on whether it actually makes sense to borrow more money, have a bigger reserve that may be earning interest at a rate that's higher than the interest we're paying out. My final thought is that if you're going to rent to the police board, that the rent be indexed to inflation and the cost of borrowing. A straight 5% is probably more right now than, you know, some loans would be, and it's probably less than it would be at other times, but I think there could be an adjustable rate that would be more fair to everyone concerned, and we'd still make back the money. Mary, now you can tell me why I'm crazy about this.
You're not crazy at all. Those are all very good points. And when I asked for the $2 million example of borrowing, it was just to keep it as low as possible, but those are all good points to borrow to allow for any kind of emergency. So yeah, those are all good points, and that's what I can incorporate into my next round. And usually on a financing, I will consult a financial advisor when we get to that point. So yes.
Thank you.
I have a comment. We're looking at the police being in the building, and part of that is to be paid for by on the police side. If we go with the scheme where the police are not in the building and we take it over for fire use, you have to then pay that money so that you'll be spending, in a sense, it's going to cost you money if you take over the whole building over leasing out half of it.
Or 1/6 of it.
Oh, half the area. Excuse me. That area, okay, the area. I take you. You're right.
So, Don, I'm sort of next alphabetically. Happy to come back to you, and also.
Okay, I interrupted, and I apologize.
No problem. We've passed 30 minutes. I put in another 15, but I'm keeping an eye on it, and I'm going to be really brief. I have just some quick comments. I echo everything that Kevin said. I think your comments were very intelligent and analytically based, Kevin, especially the benefits of financing versus burning your cash. I do want to say that I'm looking at the reserves, and one thing Mary is showing the El Cerrito contract reserve. We've discussed this at several finance committee meetings. When we were negotiating the contract renewal with El Cerrito, I mean, this is not set in stone, but there was a definite willingness to ease up on that contract reserve once we actually had a firm plan for the public safety building. They weren't willing to ease up on it in the absence of us knowing exactly what we were going to be doing, but that could potentially free up some of those reserves to use for the building. I do agree with Janice that there are some very big ticket items that the emergency preparedness folks want to discuss with the board, particularly sirens and the public address system. From what I've heard, could go as high as $1 million. So that's something that I think we need to have a big picture and a strategic picture in mind before we make some of these decisions. About the administrative costs, it's my sense that Mary's using the current budget, which we're now overdone and past RGS, which I think we can all agree was a bittersweet chapter. We made a lot of administrative improvements by necessity that have positioned us to be as agile as we are right now. It was not very efficient cost-wise, but we didn't have much control over that. But now we've settled into a general manager and a one FTE equivalent of part-time support. And that seems stable to me. So I don't think we could base the future on what happened last year with the transition.
I think it's still over a 300% increase. I think it's a 350% increase if we... Yeah.
I didn't interrupt you, and I'd appreciate it if you don't interrupt me. We can come back around again if everybody's willing to put another 15 minutes into this discussion. The parking lot, actually, my understanding is we'd have fewer employees because there would be no staff in the building. So it would be the same number of police officers, the same number of personnel from the fire department, but we wouldn't have the KCSD staff and we wouldn't have the fire district staff. So it's my understanding that the parking lot would be less challenged than it is right now if we were to adopt this option. And I really don't know about police department finances and whether that bankruptcy scenario is, if that's how it would roll out. But they, anyway, I'm not going to comment. They seem to be, I think they should have taken financing for the community center, all that was available. So they would have more reserves right now along the lines of what Kevin said. However, they do seem to have a very sophisticated general manager right now who's leading them in a pretty good direction with managing their finances. So Mary, did you have anything back at me?
No, I think you made very good points and you're correct on the budget. The last year costs were higher for the reasons that you mentioned, and the current budget and escalation are what are included in reserves, at least to the point that we're known now, not for the major projects that you mentioned.
All right, folks, I just want to take a break here, not a break, but I want to just do a reality check for a second. We do have two hands raised in the public, and we do have to go out to them. We may see more hands raised. We are coming on to 9 minutes left of our second 15-minute increment, which would bring this up to 45 minutes. So do you folks want to go around again for one more round of board member questions and comments? Or should we go out to the public?
I'm good, thank you.
Let's go and see what the public has to say. I think Christopher Deppy's hand was up first.
Oh, okay. We have a 20-minute time limit on this. Huh? I'll keep time.
Okay, Larry, thanks. Is that how you saw it, Mary, that Christopher Deppy's hand was up
first? I didn't see which one went up first, so.
I think his hand went up the moment we started this item.
I think I've managed to allow you to talk, Christopher.
I'm here.
Oh, there you go. All right.
So is it agreed that it's my time?
Yes.
Great. Okay. A couple of things, and I apologize for one of these might be a little late in the meeting, but I'm joining the meeting because Bill and Mary have had a discussion today, because Bill and I met about our meeting next week, and we are pretty blindsided by this meeting. I hadn't heard about it until Bill told me. Bill heard about it today from Mary. And so Bill sent Mary an email asking what was going on. And I think there was some misunderstanding about what this meeting was about. We assumed there were going to be a lot more decisions taken. And now I understand it's really just a continuation of an adjourned meeting. And that Bill and Mary spoke last Friday. And Mary, you didn't know about this meeting until recently. So my first question is this an adjourned meeting that was continued? Is that the idea of it?
Well, we're not going to get into Q&A, but we did say, I don't know if you were on our meeting that started at 7, we took that as an opportunity to explain that exactly this meeting at 7:15 is essentially like resuming from a very long lunch break.
Right.
This is on our agenda on September 9th.
Right, so I apologize for not speaking up then, but my understanding is that an adjourned meeting has to have an order of adjournment, and it has to be posted 24 hours after the adjournment. Was that done?
We posted the order of adjournment when we adjourned the September 9th meeting. No resumption time was part of the motion. Several board members were very anxious to pick up the meeting. Mary did her due diligence with the attorney to see if the board could had to follow the default in the government code, or if the board could, by majority, call for an earlier meeting to resume the adjourned meeting. So we followed proper procedure. We went out and polled the board about reconvening this meeting earlier than October 14th, and a majority of board members voted to reconvene the meeting early. Okay.
So that's the confusion. You did have an order of adjournment, but that was meant to be for your meeting next week, and then you decided to move it up.
Well, we posted the order of adjournment,
but you didn't have a time and place.
For a particular time and place, and right. That before we had learned from our attorney that those members of our board who desired that we reconvene earlier than October 14th.
Okay, all right. Yeah, okay, great. Okay, yes. Now I'm just trying to get to the source of the confusion. I understand now. Thank you. And I think the main point that I wanted to make, and you've already raised it, is both our Chief Schultz and Chief Pagoni have, I believe, serious concerns with Option D. And so it's not anywhere near a design that is accepted, is approved. I don't think the county has even approved it. So, but it sounds like everybody's aware of that this is just the current state of the design, and neither the fire department or police department not only hasn't approved it, but they both have issues with it. And, yeah. And so we're meeting, or we're not. I'm not meeting, but the Chief of Police and Bill and RDC are meeting tomorrow to go over the police department's concerns with the design. Some clarity on the elevator. We've discussed this also. And the reason for putting the elevator in is more because we never thought we could get a definitive answer from the county. The county has basically said, we're not sure if we could ever tell you for sure. But as you have mentioned, the ADA compliance could come up at any point, and ADA compliance is really determined in the courts. everybody in the world could say, yeah, you don't need an elevator, but that's not going to guarantee that you don't need an elevator. So I think the idea of putting an elevator in is just because it's the safest thing to do. It's a bit like assuming you've got a fault behind the building. You're not sure, but the safest thing is to assume you've got a fault and go by those regulations. So the safest is to assume that we are going to need an elevator and just proceed that way. So I don't think you have to even worry about the county saying yes or no, because it's in a way, it's kind of a moot point. There's other agencies and other, I guess, actions that would determine it.
Let's board members save our comments. Thank you, Christopher, for your comment. And the other hand that I see raised is Gail Feldman. Yes. So please let us have your comment.
Thank you. So I have a couple of things to say. One specifically about just the financing plan as it's currently been given to you. So I agree with Julie that it's important, I think, to relook at the whatever this agreement is with El Cerrito in regards to using the contract set aside for financing. I think that's only a fair thing, and I believe that you did negotiate that in good faith with them. And that would address some of Janice's concerns or Kevin's concerns, whoever raised that issue about the reserve. Secondly, in the financing plan, it looks like you've built in the temporary relocation cost. And I didn't know if that is for both fire and police or just fire. And if it's just fire, then I don't know, you're gonna have to adjust the amount that then you're charging police, because you've built it into your total project cost. So you have to adjust out the portion that the percentage in the total project cost that you're charging the police, if the temporary relocation costs that are in that plan of about $1 million is just for fire. Because they're gonna have to then figure out what they're gonna do for relocation separate from you. And they shouldn't have to pay for your relocation costs. Does that make sense?
Gail, I was thinking that I've written down some of your questions and comments, so maybe when you finish your comment, we can address those. I wanted to see if anybody else was going to have a comment as well.
But I want to say one other thing. Yes. That's not in regards to just the financing package that you've presented tonight. Just in general, I do have some concern about this meeting being scheduled tonight without a lot of notice, and I'm disappointed that it wasn't raised at the KPOA KIC meeting, where there were over 100 residents in Kensington who wanted to know what are the upcoming issues and how they can be involved in that. So it's really important to make sure that the public is completely aware of what's going on with the agenda. This one is really confusing because all the issues that Chris already raised, how you adjourned, but then adjourned to a date specific. And now 2 days before the meeting or whatever it has been, you post something. I never saw it. I got a next door notice about it, about 10 minutes before the meeting. So I'm disappointed about that. And this has been going on a bit. So, and I know you have a lot of decisions to make, but this needs to be much more regularized so the public knows when you're meeting. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gail. Let's see, Dave Spath has a hand up.
All right, Dave?
Yeah, what? Okay.
Yes.
Oh, thank you, Julie. One, I want to echo Kevin's comments and Julie's with regard to both looking at financing, particularly since the rates are so low at the present time, and Julie's point about the reserve on the fire contract. I don't think the display that you show where there's only about 125,000 reserve is really realistic when it comes to what we really have available to us. And to Julie's point, when there was a negotiation on the last contract, it was clear that El Cerrito, at least their new general manager, that indicated that there would be a willingness to be flexible in that. I had one question with regard to the 50% factor that the law allows you or limits you to, and you show over $5 million for the construction cost, Mary. But it was my understanding that at least the estimate right now for replacing the building was slightly less than $8 million. So what are we looking at as the bottom line from allowable construction cost, if you know that answer?
So Dave, can we, can we save your question and then I'll run through the points that came up with
sure. comment? That's fine.
Meant to bring that up myself, but I didn't mean to interrupt you. But if you have any other comments or questions, throw them out there, and then we'll run through the list.
No, that was the last one. Thank you, Julie. I appreciate it.
Okay, sure. So I just took some notes. First of all, from Christopher Deppy's comment, I was a little bit puzzled by that comment about the final decision on the elevator. With the fire district being the landlord, and I'm gonna put this over to Don maybe as the expert, or Don and Mary together, but with the fire district being the owner, so to speak, and landlord of the building, is the final decision on the amount of risk that we would be willing to undertake? For example, if the county was willing to waive the elevator, isn't the final decision about whether to go with or without an elevator up to the fire district?
Yes, it would be. And we've gotten verbal communication so far that the county will require an elevator, but we haven't got that in writing.
Next comment, yeah, just about the set aside with El Cerrito, just to kind of drive that home. So Don was the one who really played hardball with El Cerrito, and he made a lot of progress on getting them to really acknowledge that that would be a viable way to help us with the building. And we did discuss that at the public meeting in which El Cerrito gave us their fee proposal in 2019, and the assistant city manager was there. So I think it is really a realistic possibility or probability that they will definitely give us flexibility with that set aside. The relocation, just to clarify, the relocation cost that's in the documentation that you have now, Mary, that's fire only.
That's correct. And it's not an allocated cost toward the police production district. That was based on their use of space.
So I think that we're basically assuming that should this project go forward in any way, shape, or form, whatever option is chosen, that they'll be responsible for their own relocation and for financing that themselves?
Yes.
I mean, we haven't talked about anything different than that.
No. We've talked about the potential for housing administrative staff cooperatively, but not the full police district.
Really? Because I think where our site, Don, you've kind of sketched it out up at the Unitarian Church. I don't think it would support both districts there, would it?
No, it's really tight. I did a quick sketch, and I think the architects soon will have to face up to seeing what that's going to look like. Be both engines, and it would be the program would be similar to what we have now, but everything reduced down by 25%. It'll be very tight.
And then to the final point or question that Dave Spath raised. So Mary, if I understand it correctly, the amount of cost that is the numerator in the 50% rule is presently projected at $5,171,243, which means that the denominator needs to be at least twice that for us to be allowed to go forward. Mm-hmm. Has Mag 5 or the architect given you any feedback about?
I think we're off a little bit. That is a confusing thing there. And it turned out that we would have construction about, you know, four million, and it turned out very closely that our construction. Let me think. I'll get this right. Anyway, that would be that. I'm back now. So that the four million dollars would be for the renovation. The temporary is another million or so. We don't know. I would have probably left the dollars out because it's so up in the air. So if you want to add that on top to the four, it doesn't make any sense in relationship to the construction cost for the building. I almost would like to separate that out, and people understand, you know, the two parts.
It is.
Yeah, and that's actually, I think he included the related site costs and inspections and utilities that I don't know would be part of that.
Yeah, we can work that out.
Yeah, and the value of the building is over 8.2 or 3 at current. And then what MAC5 communicated to me is that the value would escalate. They would allow an escalation factor in the project, given that it will be over the course of 2 years. So we'll definitely find all of that information out before anything's final. We can't go over that.
Okay, so.
Could I ask a question?
Yeah, Larry, let me just see. Dave Speth, your hand is still up, but is that just an artifact of your?
I think you lowered it. Okay.
We are officially finished with public comment and back to the board.
Okay, I have two comments. First of all, on Don's comment, the document that I have in front of me says the construction cost is $5.17 million. So I think the $4 million is maybe a little off. And my other question would be, I think it was Julie that mentioned that we're not going to need any parking because all of the staff for the police and the fire are going to be off-site. And I wanted to know, is the cost of housing all of this staff been taken into it? Where does that show up in this financing bill?
So that's the temporary.
You said it's permanent. You said Julie said that all we're going to have in the firehouse are police and firefighters, and the staff is going to be someplace else, so we won't need a parking place for them.
Oh,
so somebody has to pay for that space they're going to be in. Where does that show up in these cost estimates?
And I meant, Larry, that would not be applicable for option A, but if
I understand that. Well, it would still be applicable for option A because the police is going to have to put their staff someplace no matter what, right? Someplace other than the firehouse.
Oh, well, I guess the question, yeah, I mean.
Has that cost been factored in or is that just slipped through the cracks?
As far as the police district?
The cost that we would have to pay to lease space permanently to put our staff and the cost that the police are going to have to pay to permanently house their staff.
No, that hasn't been factored into the construction cost. There's been, we've talked about an office space lease. We haven't gotten a decision on that yet.
But the estimate for a space large enough to house fire staff, and I can't comment on whether there would also be room for KPPCSD administrative staff, is like 30,000 to 35,000 a year, but I don't know if that space is large enough for staff from both districts.
I think not, but we have to draw out. We're looking now at a little different place, but I don't think it will work. But and the other thing is, I don't know how many staff they have, so that's never been resolved. I have no idea. Can't answer that question.
All right. Well, we're as usual, we're taking a lot longer than no problem, Larry. So I think it's time really for the board to decide if we're going to give Mary any direction as she's requested. Are we going to postpone this? So I put it out there for someone to propose an action for the board to take.
I would vote that we postpone this until the October 14th meeting, where we'll have, when we'll have hopefully more information on all of these questions that have been asked tonight.
Do I have a second for Larry's motion?
Second.
I would second that.
I would too, but since we have Janice, and now of course Don had to do his mandatory stretching. So I'll just comment before we vote that I think that this has given us a lot of time to process the information, Mary. It's brought more questions forward, more things to consider, and I think that's better than being confronted with a vote at the last minute. So I appreciate that you put the option out there for us to vote on this or give you direction. But I also think it gives everybody a lot to think about. It might bring, it might raise some things that you could bring back to us on October 14th, which is only a couple of weeks away. And I think we should go ahead and vote, even though Don has stepped away. So any other board member comment on the motion before I call the roll? All right, I vote in favor of the motion to postpone the discussion until October 14th. Kevin?
I vote the same.
Don's out of the room. Larry?
I vote yes.
And Janice, I'm sorry, I took you out of order. Janice?
Aye.
Okay, so that motion carries 4-0. Mary, could you please walk us through the policy change? Everybody okay moving on to that? I think Mary really needs this because it has to do with our bank balance. And she needs a second reading, which we can do in October, assuming everybody's okay with this. So could you take us through 7.7, Mary?
Yes, let me just get to that.
So 7.7 is in the September 9th agenda?
Yes.
Okay.
Jesus.
Did you want me to share my screen? I can do that.
That might help move things along.
Okay.
It might help the public as well. The packets are pretty big and hard to navigate electronically.
Okay, let's see. Share. I'm going to share this one. Okay. All right. So this is an item, and we had briefly talked about it, I believe, in August. Proposed amendment to Policy 8, checking account. At that point in time, we evaluated a temporary resolution that would increase the checking account limit from $35,000 at that current point in time to $150,000 to allow for deposit of the SERP trust fund reimbursement. We deposited into the checking account so that we could make some payments out of that. We're trying to make things a bit more efficient, and requesting things through the county sometimes takes a lot of hoops and a little bit more time than we'd like. So in looking at that, we also put together a proposed amendment to the checking account resolution. And at that point in time, we had questions on the concern for lost interest, being if $200,000 were maintained in that account versus the current $35,000 that we'd be losing interest earnings on that. So I brought the information back. What I did was take a look at as a maximum balance, and I wouldn't anticipate always holding $200,000 in that account. I tried to allow for payments to go through, but I wouldn't anticipate that it would always be at $200,000, but I used the maximum balance just for demonstration purposes. So when I look at the current balance versus the proposed, we have the Mechanics Bank interest rate of 0.35%, very low. What that would translate to versus the LAIF interest rate of 1.47%. So on interest earnings from the Mechanics Bank, it would be low, 123 on the current version, 200,000, it would be $700. versus LAIF earnings on the proposed. So what I have here, so currently the balance, the 200,000 minus the 35,000 are contained within LAIF. So you see the interest earnings of 2,426 here. This amount is actually not here because that amount would be, that would be your lost interest earnings. So what I then looked at is under the current situation, because of the amount of county coordination and vendor coordination throughout the year, and especially given now with the restrictions for pandemic and trying to get payments out, and we've had a lot of back and forth on getting payments through the county. I evaluated what the staff time would be on vendor communication as $4,000 per year, $4,500 in a year, given what we've recently experienced. And on the opposite side, I've used that as an offset because you'd essentially be saving that time. So when you look at the net savings or cost, for the staff time lost here, for the staff time that you would have available here, you actually are costing, there's an additional cost to the current situation of $2,000 versus under the proposed, you'd actually be ahead $2,824. Just as a, you know, maximum of what that would look like, the staff time offset with the interest earnings lost. And then the policy is contained in the next couple of pages, the clean version of the policy containing that limit, and then the red line or blue line, as it would be, containing the changes to the policy, which includes also not only the dollar amount, but the title of the general manager or their designee. Legal counsel thought it was best to have some options, and we've talked a lot about continuity and some of the other wording, documentation and or invoices, and those would be the only changes. And that, I think I have completed the review. So what we would be recommending is to consider approval of the proposed amendments to policy 8, checking account and holding the first reading. And I'm happy to answer questions.
All right, thank you, Mary. So let's go in order, and thank you for being responsive to the concerns that were raised when you brought this to the board the first time around. Mm-hmm. Is Don back?
Yes.
I'm back.
All right, start with you, Don. Do you have questions or comments as part of this first reading?
No, I don't have any comments. I was missing an action.
Okay. Janice.
I think I'm going to vote no because I distrust that it's taking $4,500 a year of staff time not to maintain $200,000 in the checking account. I find that hard to believe, with all due respect.
Okay. Larry?
The proposal sounds reasonable to me. I have no questions at this time.
All right, Kevin.
Nothing from me.
And I have nothing further to add either. I appreciate the analysis. I've probably spent more time with staff than other board members just during the RGS period where I had to make a lot of decisions, and then working with Mary to transition into her taking over. And it's really been very, my experience watching what's going on is that it's been very time consuming working with the county, especially during this period. Everything's taking twice as long to get, at least, to get the same thing done. So, I mean, I think Mary's estimate of staff time is credible. So this is a first reading. I haven't heard anybody actually make a suggestion for amending the policy. I understand that not everybody will vote for it when it comes back. But let's just see if there's any public comment on this proposed policy change, just to make sure we cover all the bases.
I don't see any.
I don't see any either. So Mary, you can bring this back to us on October 14th. This is technically September 9th. Okay. Extended animation.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so we now move on to item 7.8. And I would like to just take a minute to explain the two action items and why Mary and I had crafted this the way we did for the September 9th meeting. So generally when we put an agenda together, we take the old business first before the new business, unless we have a speaker who's specifically showing up at our meeting to address a particular item, because we don't really like to keep our speakers and guests, and in particular our attorney, hanging around until 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night. When Mary and I tallied up the requested and mandatory items of our fire chief and old business, we pretty much came up with a 3-hour meeting even before considering the emergency preparedness items. So we ran into a situation about a month ago where a board member wanted to call a special meeting about emergency preparedness in between meetings. And we tried to figure out, how do we get a majority vote on that without saying too much? Because how does the board make a decision between meetings according to the Brown Act? And Mary concluded that the only way to do that was to just basically poll to ask if they were willing to attend a special meeting on emergency preparedness. And that poll resulted in 3-2 against having that meeting. So we thought it would be more straightforward and more informative to the board, knowing that there was a good chance that we'd run out of time before we got to this meeting, to provide an option to show what a special meeting would look like. So the board could vote in public whether they wanted to call a special meeting on any and all of these items. And in the event we had time left, we also had the option to take some or all of these meetings on September 9th, which it turned out kind of, we didn't even get through what we thought we'd get through anyway. So that's why we framed it this way, actually to provide more transparency, more information to the board in the public domain, to avoid a Brown Act violation, maybe enough said. So moving into this, we have, what do we have, 7 items. We could certainly just start taking these items one at a time. Someone could also make a motion that they would like to save that item for a special meeting. So I'm gonna, unless someone makes a different motion, I'm gonna propose that we start working through these items one at a time tonight.
I'd like to make a different, I mean, we would like to work them through, but in a somewhat different order.
Does anyone have an objection to Kevin deciding the order of these items?
I'd like to know what his proposed order is.
I think it's fair, a fair request. What do you propose, Kevin?
That first of all, we do 7.8.7.
All right, I'm making notes on the agenda so I get it right. So you want the last one first?
Yes, please. And then 7.8.1. And then 7.8.5. And then 7.8.6. And then 7.8.2. And then 7.8.3 and 4, which will not take long at all.
So item 7, then item 1, then item 3, then item 6, then item 2.
No, actually 5 came before.
Yes, item 3 is point 5.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm getting mixed up with my number on my page. I think we all heard it.
Okay.
All right. Does anyone object to the order that Kevin has proposed?
Run by them again for me, please.
Okay, so first we're taking 7.8.7, which are preliminary calculations of the traffic load. I won't read the whole thing. Second, he's proposing 7.8.1, which is an information item. So these are both information items that you are wanting to take first. So 7.8.1, changes to Kensington traffic and evacuation patterns. Then I wrote down that his third item would be 7.8.5, request for the board to approve action items proposed by the Kensington Police Department regarding investigation and potential parking changes. Emma, have I got it so far?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, then fourth, I have 7.8.6. This is the emergency preparedness coordinator. Fifth is 7.8.2, the NICSL item. Sixth is the radio item, 7.8.3. And seventh is the public address system item, 7.8.4. Does anyone object to that order? Oh. All right then. I will say that
Can I just ask, I don't think the question was ever answered. When is this meeting, how long is this meeting supposed to last?
You know, Larry, by default, we could say 10.
Okay.
I really don't know about an adjourned meeting and what the act, do the same parameters as a regular meeting apply?
That's exactly my question.
We don't have a time limit on the agenda, so I'm assuming we can go to 10 if everyone's willing. Anyone can make a motion at any time to adjourn this meeting. And please say when you'd like to adjourn it to, if you decide to make such a motion.
Adjourn or postpone, yeah.
Well, if we don't finish all these items, then we'd have to adjourn again, but
okay.
Please say when you're proposing to adjourn.
We've got almost an hour and a half to cover these items. I think that should be enough, Kevin, you think?
I think so, Larry. We're not going to ask the board to do much on most of this.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to do some, well, I got a public comment by email and it addresses all of these items. Normally we would take public comment after we address each item. So maybe after the first applicable item, it doesn't actually address all of them, then I will read the email that we received. So Kevin, please go forward with 7.8.7.
Thank you, Julie. This is going to take a few minutes, but it's information that the board and the community very much need. I'm going to talk to you a bit about the fire danger that we have and the parameters of traffic evacuations that we understand for Kensington and surrounding communities. This information we're talking about is compiled from sources, including our traffic evacuation report, things that Chief Pagoni has said, that Battalion Chief Capallo has said, Chief Schuld, Officer Harms, the Contra Costa County, and other sources. I want people to understand that what I'm about to tell you has been vetted by Larry and several members of our EPC, as well as Battalion Chief Capallo, Police Chief Schuld, and Officer Harms. After we did all that, we sent this to Chief Pagoni. I was hoping that some of what I'm about to tell you is desperately wrong, but no one can find anything wrong with it. And we have full support for this, so I'm just going to present it to you. We have an article that Battalion Chief Grappolo forwarded to some of us about a month ago, and it says that, quote, a USA Today Network California analysis of populations, fire risk zones, and roadways shows that roughly one out of every 100 zip codes in California has a population to evacuation route ratio that is near to or worse than that of Paradise and its neighbor, Magalia. So that's a population to evacuation route ratio that's near to or worse. Now, among that 1% of zip codes, in all of Northern California, only 10 zip codes were identified as most hazardous. There is only one in the Bay Area, and that's 94708. That's Upper Kensington and the North Berkeley Hills, although not Upper El Cerrito, and there are historical reasons for that, of how they were built up. So Upper Kensington lives in the most dangerous zip code in the entire Bay Area in terms of evacuation in an emergency. So how do we respond to this situation? So we looked at some evidence and we have some analysis. The first question is, how long will it take to evacuate Kensington? Now, if everyone in town has to evacuate with little or no notice, because we've got a sudden fire that's sprung up to the northeast of us and the wind is spreading it quickly, as we would have in a Diablo wind event, how long will it take the town to evacuate? Well, the traffic evacuation study and information from the county and the police and fire departments is combined into a hypothetical model here. We don't have any statistical constraints on it, but we have a range of variables. We can use other variables, but I can't get a much better outcome, so I'm just going to tell you what it is. There are about 2,800 households in Kensington. Each household has an average 1 to 2.5 cars. We're going to start with 1.5 cars per household being put on the road during an evacuation, because that's what our traffic consultants do. Let's assume you need a minimum of 15 feet per car, including space between you and the next car. Now let's consider an estimate of about 10 miles of Kensington roads to evacuate on. This is approximately correct if all of the smallest tributaries and lanes are counted. You can go to the Google map of Kensington, bring it down to the scale of 1,000 feet, and you can very quickly do the calculations, really just almost exactly 10 miles. Now, under these conservative figures, each car on the road would be able to occupy a road length of 12 to 13 feet, including the space between you and the next car. That's not enough room if everyone is on the road at once, but we'll get to that. If every household evacuates in only one car, which is unrealistic, we get 50% more room. So that's 18 to 19 feet per car. And that's still not great, especially in motion. So essentially, if this model is anywhere near accurate, we are bumper to bumper throughout town. It's not only the closeness between cars, but the backup at the many intersections of small roads in the hills that have to be considered. So how long under these circumstances will it take to evacuate if you live in the hills? If people are polite at intersections and if they allow alternate merging, you'll still be slowed by every tributary to the larger roads, including those from outside neighborhoods. It may be difficult to turn on the Arlington. In fact, sometimes it always is. You should not expect a traffic officer at every junction. Police staffing is 1 to 4 uniforms at any time, 1 at nights and on weekends, and up to 4 during weekdays. They will be at the Arlington intersections, Amherst, the gas station, Sunset, Kensington Park Drive, especially if school is in session. Assistance can be requested from the county sheriff, but that mutual aid will depend on other situations in the county. Some evacuation routes could, of course, run through Berkeley and El Cerrito, but we might also get some of their cars, so we don't really understand all that well. So what would you say your rate of progress would be bumper to bumper and alternating at intersections? Would you say 1 mile an hour? 2? Likely not 5, especially if you live in the upper hills. So how many miles would you have to go to escape the advancing flames? Remember that once you get to the flatlands, many people there will be evacuating too. Streets may be crowded. Albany and El Cerrito police will have to deal with their own neighborhoods, and we're told not to expect any help from them. So now think about how many hours you may have to escape. As Chief Pagoni has pointed out several times, Concord is 12 miles away, and wildfires during a Diablo wind event typically travel at 3 to 4 miles per hour in this area. Actually, for Paradise and other figures, they could be twice that. So 3 to 4 hours to reach Kensington, even from that far away, does that seem like enough time to evacuate the whole town of 5,000 people? Remember that many people will not have go bags packed. On major evacuation arteries, such as Coventry and Ardmore, many blocks have two-way parking with only one traffic lane. Half of the cars parked on those blocks are facing the wrong way, so they will need to do K-turns. That will delay not only their immediate neighbors, but everyone to the east uphill trying to head downhill, and those people will experience a series of bottlenecks. Now, what say if a fire begins closer to Kensington? Let's say the little farm in Tilden Park. Everybody knows where that is. That's 1,000 feet downslope from the houses on Los Altos. At that rate of spread, it reaches these homes in 3 to 4 minutes. Even at 1 mile per hour, you might have only 15 to 20 minutes to evacuate. And that's not counting the time that it takes for you to be notified. That's from the time the fire starts to spread. The picture for the entire town, unfortunately, does not get better. Los Altos Drive and nearby streets that border the park are approximately a mile as the crow flies, but much longer on the roads, from Colusa. Now, Colusa is just a landmark. Reaching Colusa Avenue is not reaching safety. The same fire, traveling 3 to 4 miles per hour, would take 15 to 20 minutes to reach Colusa from the ridge. This may be mitigated because fire could travel more slowly downhill. But on the other hand, volatile embers in advance of the flames could leapfrog the front of the fire and ignite new ones farther downslope. Even if a fire only travels 1 mile per hour, it reaches Colusa in an hour. And by that time, it's blown through the neighborhoods. Now, in the glass fires that are now ravaging Napa and Sonoma counties, there have been documented reports of embers 6 to 8 inches on a side, wafting half a mile to a mile in advance of the fire line. One woman on the news said this was as big as her face. She showed pictures of them, these big embers. Some people recognize them as fragments of eucalyptus. So it's good we don't have any eucalyptus around here. Now imagine those embers spreading a mile in advance of the fire line on the Kensington Ridge, wafting toward Colusa. Fire Marshal Dave Gibson has often said in his presentations that in a suburban conflagration, another house ignites every 4 seconds. CNN noted that the Camp wildfire spread at a rate of 1 foot oil field a second. That's a figure quoted by Chief Pagoni. The chief has also noted that the Butte County fire was spreading at 2,000 acres per hour, or 1.15 square miles. That's an area slightly larger than Kensington. Now you have to look at these as time average numbers, because fires grow geometrically, not linearly through time, but the rate is still astonishing. If a broad fire line reaches Kensington's eastern border, there is really precious little time for people to be warned and to evacuate. If these numbers are even anywhere near accurate, we have some important questions about how and when our residents will be warned that they may have to evacuate, should consider evacuating if they feel threatened, or must evacuate. Supervisor Joya and the county OES have stressed that the county has no evacuation plan. It will not issue evacuation orders. That has to be handled on a local basis. The city of El Cerrito has announced that it will not use its Nixle account to issue evacuation orders. So we need more public information about who, when, how, and by what criteria the may, should, must evacuation advice will be given, particularly to Kensington. What we know is that local evacuation orders will be issued by Kensington's police and fire departments. The staff on duty will receive the information about the perceived threat. Presumably, they'll consult their superiors for guidance on issuing announcements. These can be done then through the county warning systems, in which all residents should enroll, and through the Nixle accounts of police and fire, if they're available. So it should be understood that public directions come in three levels. There are alerts, there are warnings, and there are orders. Residents can receive an alert that emphasizes awareness of their surroundings, as our chief often stresses, you've got to be aware of your surroundings, and suggestions to prepare to pack to leave if it's necessary. A warning suggests that evacuation may be imminent, and those who feel threatened should pre-evacuate. An order, of course, is mandatory, but public officials stress not to wait for an official order if you feel threatened. Some people never receive notifications. So consider pre-evacuating if you have people with health problems, limited mobility, kids and pets, or if you're just going to take you more time to gather stuff. It's your life and your decision. If you feel uncomfortable or threatened, you should leave. So the information here needs further discussion. Once we can have any further modification that our public safety officials feel necessary, it seems to be our responsibility as a board to get this information in front of the public and to show them exactly what they're facing. Because we're not suggesting that people change parking configurations or that we make any of the other modifications that the traffic consultants recommended. We don't take these lightly. This is a matter of life and death, and people should treat it as such. I wanted people to understand these preliminary calculations of what the load is going to be, what the evacuation picture looks like. I wish it were better. None of us yet can see how it really is. And that's the first item.
Are you looking for something from the board? Also, I noticed there's supporting material, but I couldn't find it in the packet.
Yes, I'm very sorry. We intended there to be supporting material, but we did not want to bring that to the board until Chief Bregoni had a chance to see it. Unfortunately, he was only able to get back to me on Monday, so we couldn't put it in the packet. But we can have it for next time.
Okay, so I want to go to discussion, but I just want to clarify whether you're looking for anything particular from the board.
Thank you, Julie. No, I think this is information. And I think that our recommendation eventually will be that as we begin to get the wherewithal to notify the public and educate the public more about evacuation, that information like this will have to be an important part of it.
Great. I'll just go around in the usual order to see if board members have any comments. Don?
No, it's quite impressive, though.
Thank you. We worked hard on it.
Janice?
No.
Larry?
Yeah, well, Kevin and I have worked on this together, so none of this comes as a surprise to me, but I'm glad that we can finally get it out to the community. I see we've got at least 17 people listening to this. And this is, in my mind, this is number one priority. We have to protect the lives first and property second of the people of Kensington. That's our job. So what Kevin has given you is just sort of an overview and a motivation for why we're doing what we're doing. Our specific actions, I think, will follow later. But I mean later tonight, not a month from now. That's really all I have. I'd like to repeat what Kevin said, that we have run this by many experts in the field of wildfires, and we have gotten no disagreement. So that suggests to me that what Kevin has told you and what you'll be seeing in paper soon is spot on. And we need to deal with that. Thank you.
I just have one clarifying question. Are these calculations under an assumption that we would not be utilizing, for whatever reason, the staged evacuation software of Zonehaven, which is essentially designed to prevent all the cars from being on the road at once, whenever possible? I realize it's not always possible, but they evacuate the most threatened areas first. Is my understanding of the principle.
Yeah, this is the justification for using zone alarm, the fact that we don't want everybody to go at the same time. But unfortunately, if there's a fire, there will be panic. We know that. And people are not going to say, well, I haven't been told to evacuate yet, so I'm just going to sit here. Some people, we have to deal with the cause of the problem, which is that there's too few roads and too many cars.
Thanks, Larry.
I would look at it slightly. I think what Larry, the last thing that Larry said is the best starting point. We are not like other areas anywhere around here. Well, North Berkeley Hills, but we are way too much built up. We have too many people, too many cars. The houses are too big and too close together. There's too much vegetation. There are too many power lines and poles. The parking is crazy. There's pinch points. This was not a planned community by any stretch of the imagination. Whereas if you just go over into the El Cerrito Hills a little farther north, you find the houses are smaller, vegetation is smaller, the roads are twice as wide. They have room for two lanes of traffic, as well as usually two lanes of parking. It's just not like El Cerrito. And you can say that places like La Mirinda or San Mateo do really well with Zonehaven. And I think if you have enough time, you know, 5 or 6 hours, you could start thinking about that. But if you have 1 to 3 or even 4 or 5 hours, unless people are really packed and ready to leave, I mean, stage migration might be a tough call. And I would be afraid, and here I'm kind of putting on the chief's hat maybe, but he always is very smart about being risk averse. And if somebody were not told that there was a fire threatening because the decision was made to evacuate people up the hill, I mean, I wouldn't want to be responsible for any kind of a lawsuit there. Of course, I would love the chief to make any comments he likes to after the board members are finished, but I worry about whether the polygon model will help us if a fire starts too close and spreads too quickly. That's all I'd say.
Okay, I was going to ask Chief Pagoni whether, do you want to offer anything to the discussion?
Well, as Kevin said, I mean, I got this over the weekend and did respond back to him on Monday and basically said, you know, you've pretty much hit the nail on the head, you know, as far as what, you know, the potential issues could be. You know, as far as using the Zonehaven or staged evacuation, you know, to me, yes, you're going to have people that are going to realize that we're evacuating. And even if we do try to use Zonehaven or use the staged evacuation, there are going to be those other people that are just going to leave anyway. You know, I mean, if they somehow find out that there is an evacuation in progress, and we've already seen that on a false alarm that, you know, through social media, the word travels very, very quickly, that, you know, we need to evacuate, you know, it may be circumvented. I mean, or it may not work because of that simple fact with it. You know, we're dealing with, I mean, it is this going, if we're talking about a fire that starts, you know, down at the base, you know, along Wildcat Trail, you know, that's going to come up the hill very quickly. You know, there is a major danger in that or threat in that, because there is very little time. If we're dealing with a fire that's moving across the hills where we do have those hours, you know, I still believe it's worthwhile to, you know, to attempt to use the staged evacuation. There still may be those people that leave on their own. But if we can get, you know, again, any people we can get to go slightly, you know, in turn, so to speak, you know, we're going to be better off. You know, that it's two different things, the sudden fire that just erupts or the one we know it's coming, you know, such as what we're just experiencing with the glass fire, you know, they had, they did the evacuations of Calistoga and St. Helena. They had time to, they had, you know, hours and hours when, you know, they pulled the trigger quickly there because they knew that it was heading that way. You know, the same with, different from that then would have been the Angwin or the little community of Angwin, where it kind of got there a little quicker. They still pulled the trigger and did the evacuations, but there wasn't as much, there wasn't as much time for that. But, you know, it's, there's two different scenarios there, as I said, the one where we know, you know, it's coming across the canyon or it's coming, you know, basically from San Pablo Dam Road area, you know, coming across, or the one that starts suddenly. You know, and even the other fear without it even, I mean, that we don't think about, doesn't even have to come out of the canyon. It can be a house, you know, just one of the homes that catch on fire for some reason, you know, during one of these windstorms. At that point, the fire is already there, which, I mean, again, and it's not the save all. If we can get the residents, you know, to abide by the vegetation management, if we can get them to do hardening on their homes, to, you know, do everything possible to make their home as resilient as you can against an ember cast, you know, we're, if nothing else, it gives you a place to attempt, if you can't get out, it gives you a place to attempt to ride the fire out for a short period of time. I mean, if, you know, again, because if you watch the news a lot, and we had one of our engines up in the Oakmont area at the beginning, or when the fire hit the Santa Rosa, which was the day after it started in Napa, many of those Oakmont houses there, it was not the fire traveling in the vegetation. It literally was the embers falling onto the houses. You know, if you watch the news, I mean, one, there wasn't a lot of trees around there. But you know, it was a house here, a house there, it, you know, where, you know, basically the houses that weren't prepared, you know, that were catching on fire. So it's, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. I mean, Kevin's very correct in, you know, there's a lot of things for us to discuss, but it starts, I mean, well, it's, we all have places to start with it, but for the most part, it starts with the property owners or, you know, with the people that, the residents, in doing everything they can to make their house, you know, more resilient. You know, those that were on the KPOA meeting on Saturday, you know, as I mentioned then, look at a Google map, an aerial map of Kensington. The greatest amount of fuel that you see in the community are the homes. I mean, vegetation's, it's there. I mean, I'm not discounting that. But the biggest fuel load in the community are the homes. So if you can make the homes resilient, you're taking the majority of the fuel away. And if you're taking, and if we can keep the fire out of the trees, you know, by doing vegetation management, it's not perfect, but it gives us a better chance. It's, you know, it's another tool for us. It's another advantage to what we're doing.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate your feedback on that. I think that just to keep us on time, I'm going to look to the public and to see if anyone in the public would like to make a comment. This is not an action item, but let's take some brief public comment. Okay, I see one hand. excuse me, Mabry Benson.
Right. I know when you first brought up the Zone Haven issue, and it all looked very, very swell, but my public comment at the time was, if I see something happening uphill, and I'm down on Eureka, and I'm so glad you opened the cemetery, it will really, really relieve what's happening on Eureka, I'm leaving. I'm sorry. Charity does not extend in a situation like that. So I think it's right that you can't count on people, we'll just say, taking their turn.
Thank you. Let's see, I don't see any other hands, so there's no further comment from the board. I'd like to move on to the next item, which is 7.8.1.
Actually, I think people know about this already because we had an article in the Outlook about it, but we have done, in cooperation with the police department and the Department of Public Works, we've done two things. The first is to open up the cemetery, as Mabry just mentioned. Our traffic consultants estimated that this would relieve up to 30% of the load on surrounding streets. And given that those streets are Ardmore and Coventry as the closest ones probably, that's a really big help. And I want to shout out to Larry and to Mr. Scott Pennington, who directs the Sunset View Cemetery, because they couldn't have been more cooperative. And Officer Harms and I went down there and talked to them, and they said, anything you want, you know, we'll just get it done. So I went and scoped out to see where, from the gate, if you went in from the gate and were driving, how you would know to get out. And the cemetery, of course, is a very confusing place, not for its residents, but for everybody else. It can be hard to find a way around. And so we found two places where we thought exit signs would be very helpful. And Mr. Pennington was kind enough to allow us to set them up there. On the evacuation, for the Sunset Gate to the cemetery, we decided to get two blue evacuation signs, one pointing left, one pointing right, both pointing in toward that gate so that people would know when they came down Sunset, they could go down that way. The police have keys. There are always people living at the cemetery besides the permanent residents, and they have keys. And a couple of our local residents in the area have been given keys. And we know that other people have told us they have bolt cutters, but we hope that won't be necessary because we should be able to get the gates open. And that should really help us a lot. The other thing that we did was to take another recommendation of a traffic study and convert the six or eight bollards that are in the southeast of town around the neighborhood of Kensington School and surrounding areas and convert them to chains that are removable on one side. They can't be completely taken away, but they can be removed from one side. And so vehicles can get through. Also, so can pedestrians, wheelchairs, shopping carts. There's another place for them to do that. And we are doing this along with Officer Harms and his plans as the traffic safety officer. We're doing this for several reasons. One is that we felt that we needed a really good plan to evacuate the school. If school ever gets back in session, it'll be important for us to have really strong evacuation routes. And Daniel Madugo on our committee and Officer Harms are working with other people in the school, PTA. Danielle has kids in the school as well, and the teachers to try to work out the best kind of evacuation plan that we can to do this. This may result in some directional changes of parking that would principally relate to picking up children if necessary, but otherwise they would be for either emergency vehicles getting up into the hills, notably by Kensington Park Drive, which goes straight up to the school and then people can go up by Highland and so on, or it's an egress to the west for people who are in the surrounding neighborhoods. Those are a couple of things that we've done so far. And I guess, Larry, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that really what we did is we went after the low-hanging fruit. We went after those things that would have the biggest bang for the buck. We had if you'll recall, I believe it was the July meeting, we had $5,000 allocated, or was it the June meeting? We could open up the cemetery for the cost of a couple of signs and That was very cost effective. The bollards are very cost effective. The more we do, the more expensive this is going to get. And so we have to trade off resources versus safety. But the most important thing here, and a big shout out to the police department and especially Chief Schold and especially Officer Harms for conducting neighborhood Zoom meetings and telling, briefing them on parking, getting their concerns, and trying to come up with some simple solutions for mitigating some of the parking problems. The more we get into this, the more complicated it's going to get, the more resistance we're probably going to get from residents, and the more expensive it's going to get, up to the point where you start talking about putting grading over, like on my street, over the gutters so that cars can move over a couple of feet. But that grading is kilobucks per mile. And all of a sudden, our modest emergency preparedness committee budget gets really strained. So that's my comment. You're muted, Jillian.
Thanks. So Don is presently taking a walk around the house break as mandated by his physician. And that leaves Janice. Do you have any comments?
Nope.
And I don't have any comments either. Chief Pagoni? He might be on break.
No, I was muted for a second. I have no further.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's see if we have any public comment. Not seeing any hands raised. So thank you for that report. And we are on to 7.8.5, request for the board to approve action items proposed by the Kensington Police Department regarding investigation into potential changes in parking configuration on 6 segments of Kensington streets, including public input, and to approve the production, no cost, of an educational video to explain the rationale for the proposed parking changes. So that's one long sentence. Why don't you let us know, Kevin, what you're seeking from the board?
Thank you, Julie. The supplementary information for this begins on page 53 of the 66-page board packet, and most of it is background. If you scroll down to page 54, you'll see a map of the streets that Officer Harms, in consultation with others, has identified as the first low-hanging fruit. You'll notice that it's in the neighborhood of Kensington School, and this is one of the reasons why it was a good thing to work on. The proposed changes in parking are listed in the legend. I won't belabor them here, but what we ask is at the bottom of page 55. The police department is obviously the people who have to execute this. At the meeting that was convened by John Gioia and his office to deal with Kensington parking, Chris Deppi made the very good suggestion that both boards should consider these two items and should adopt them so that the community will understand that there is formal support for investigating what kinds of changes can be made and producing an educational video with some of our public safety officials, there are our chiefs and officers who can talk about this and explain to the public why this is important. The police department is even now putting together a brochure that explains much of what is here that can be handed out to residents. And Larry is correct. They did have a meeting with the neighbors on Windsor, which is a one-way block in which the parking faces the end of the cul-de-sac. They had a Zoom meeting on this last week, and John Gioia and Kate Rausch attended that meeting, and the residents voiced some concerns. Some of them are instantiated in a letter that's included in the board packet. And we don't have to go through all this. We understand these are very important concerns, and the people, you know, parking is always a third rail issue, and no one wants to make life difficult for people. But what Supervisor Gioia, I'm told by Officer Harms, told the people there was that, look, you know, if you don't want to change something in terms of parking, and all it's going to hurt is yourselves, each other, you know, I mean, maybe we could live with that, I'm paraphrasing, but if your actions are going to affect other people in other neighborhoods, that's not your local decision. And things have to be explained to people so they understand we're not doing this lightly. We're not recommending this lightly. And that the fire board has no power to do anything except help. And we'd like to help as much as possible. That's why I read you all that stuff about evacuation. I mean, we may have minutes, and minutes while people do K-turns or try to drive down to the end of a cul-de-sac and turn around when there's only one lane of driving and one lane of parking, that's going to take a very long time. You're going to have tempers. You're going to have people driving on lawns. You're going to have people crashing into things. I mean, it's going to be a panic, as everyone acknowledges. And we really need to make sure that we do our best to educate the public. This is a no-cost proposal. It's a no-cost proposal. We just like to agree with Chris Deppe and the others on the police board. They passed this motion on their regular meeting in July, the day after our July meeting. And Larry and I and our committee would like it if our board would pass these two motions at the bottom of page 55 so that everybody's on board and we can proceed with helping the police educate the populace.
All right. I'm going to go around to the board. I've got quite a few comments written down for myself, but we'll stick to the protocol. Don, comments?
I think I'll pass.
Janice?
I'll pass.
Larry?
I would like to make a motion that the board approve a request sponsored by the Kensington Police Department and the Emergency Preparedness Committee of the Kensington Fire Protection District based on recommendations of the Traffic Evacuation Study Commission by the Kensington Fire Protection District to recommend to the county proposed parking orientation changes on 6 Kensington Street segments. That's my first motion. I also have the second motion in the hopper.
I will second that.
Okay. So why don't we keep discussing, because we did not, so then we'll go around again to discuss Larry's motion, but.
Okay, yeah. In terms of just this discussion, this is purely what we're doing is we're expressing solidarity with the police department. I will say that I've never in my 10 years in Kensington seen more cooperation between the police department and the fire department, and it's exactly what we need to solve this problem. So I think we're on the right track. It's going to take a while, and let's hope we get it done before we have to actually use these evacuation procedures. And I can make the motion again, Julie, if it was out of order. I thought
that's no problem, Larry. especially because it's written down. So I have, my general comment is I feel like I hear different things at different meetings. I listened in on the KPP-CSD meeting when they discussed, when Officer Harms gave his presentation. Officer Harms seems to be under the impression that the Fire District Board of Directors has already discussed this and supports it as a board, when actually this is coming before us as a board for the very first time tonight. So I think it's a bit unfortunate. I don't know how Officer Harms got that impression. He's very well intentioned. My understanding, and I've listened to it twice, that was not that the KPP-CSD board passed this motion. Rather, my understanding of their action was that they directed the police department to engage in a program or to initiate a program of public engagement and engage the residents, particularly the residents who are affected by these proposed changes. And I think the exact words were, report back to us. So that was my recollection of their motion. So I'm a little surprised that we're actually entertaining this right now, given that that board is waiting for the police department to report back to them after their public engagement process, which I do understand to be ongoing. So I heard Chief Schultz's presentation at the KPOA-KIC joint meeting, and he voiced something that had been going through my mind, and I think you touched on it, Kevin, that at least with these set of six changes, we have some proposed changes that are sort of localized to the residents, particularly the cul-de-sacs, that affect those people, but really don't affect the rest of Kensington. And then we have some changes proposed that would affect major evacuation routes through Kensington, although I don't know if those have been defined yet. I also just wanted to note that it's been, I want to say, over a year. I don't know exactly when, but I think Director Natoli was the president of the KPP-CSD, and I thought she said this at our fire board meeting, that she had spoken with the county and the residents of, in particular, those cul-de-sacs. If they wished to see changes, they could mobilize as a group and approach the county on their own. And the county would be willing to listen to them if they themselves wanted parking changes on their cul-de-sacs. I've listened to the last two Emergency Preparedness Committee meetings. It hasn't been clear to me that the entire Emergency Preparedness Committee is sponsoring this request yet. I heard a lot of concern expressed that we need community engagement before the board even considers voting on anything. At the last Emergency Preparedness Committee meeting, I think it was last week, a member of the public asked what I thought was a very important question, which is, has it been determined which routes the fire engines will take up the hill to approach an emergency fire in the park? How can we begin making these changes without having that most important set of routes established, which is the routes that the emergency vehicles will take to combat a threat in the park, which I think is kind of what we're aiming at here. So, and I guess the other thing is that Joya's office, you know, we have a copy of the email summary that they sent out, and they emphasize community engagement as being paramount to any process, and that they would actually be looking for a resolution from this board, not a motion. So I'm not even sure if we passed a motion tonight, whether it would have any teeth with the county. So I'm just mentioning that as a technicality. And that, and just to touch on the communication from the residents on Windsor, I thought it was meaningfully done. And what it kind of brought to my mind is that the students who did the traffic study, they did an excellent job. And they looked at it from the perspective in which they're trained. But the residents on Windsor brought up a number of factors that are very important to them that we wouldn't have necessarily expected the students to take into account when they did their study. So I guess I just think that the traffic study is one component of this, but I just thought that the communication from the residents on Windsor was very meaningful. They talked about where the AT&T, Comcast, and Sonic trucks park when they come to do work on the street, where the children play, maintaining good relations with police and neighbors, and the sight line that they use with the current parking configuration to make sure that their kids are safe while playing in the street. So I just think there are factors that the community needs to weigh in on before a majority of the two boards takes this very important decision under consideration.
Yeah, I'd like to speak to that and amend my motion. I think we're 100% in favor of the idea that we need community involvement and community agreement on all of this. It's not gonna work without that. And we weren't, I read the motion again, it does sound like we're going off on our own to the county. I don't think that's what's meant. And I would like to amend my motion rather than to say to recommend to the county proposed parking orientation changes, I would like to change that phrase to say to develop with, in collaboration with the Kensington Police Department, proposed parking orientation changes. So I'm just saying that we want our district to work in collaboration with the Kensington Police Department to develop these changes. And that's basically, I think what we're saying is we're just supporting, it's the Kensington Police Department that has to make these or recommend these changes to the county. And they know they need the buy-in and we're just supporting them. That's my take on this. Kevin, you can.
Well, can I just ask you, Larry, because part of your motion includes approving a request sponsored by the KPD and the Emergency Preparedness Committee. So there are 9 people on that committee. Have 5 people on that committee voted to bring this to our board?
We don't take votes. We don't have a requirement to take votes. And we usually go by consensus if we get it. If we have questions that remain about an issue, we often want to just do more work before we bring it to the board, but sometimes we want to bring it to the board for direction and guidance just to see if the board thinks we're on the right track.
Well, that's fine. This is it's sponsored by the committee, and I've been attending those meetings, and I just didn't even hear a consensus about this. I could be wrong.
There are 8 members of the committee here tonight. You can poll them if you want to.
Well, they're welcome to speak during public comment, and I think that would be very useful.
Okay. You asked about...
I did a motion. I don't know what Mr. Sturgis says about how you do that. I proposed an amendment. Does somebody have to accept that or second it again? Or
probably seconded it.
Has to accept it. I don't know that your motion was seconded.
I seconded it, Janice.
Yeah.
So does Kevin have, if Kevin accepts my motion, then it's accepted as amended?
Well, let's see if he seconds it again, just to be safe.
I'm happy to second it again.
All right, does anyone on the board want to make any other comment, or Chief Pagone? Janice, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment because I live on Windsor, and we had what I thought was a very productive meeting with the chief and with Officer Harms. And my preference would be to have no motion at all. So I will vote no on your motion, Larry, because I think they're working well with the residents to try to allow a solution to evolve. And I think our resolution or motion just gets in the way.
So can I respond to things that you mentioned, Julie? First of all, with Janice's comment, certainly for one block on Windsor, that's one thing, but these recommendations are for the whole town. There are going to be more proposed changes to investigate. And I think if we just take a look around town, you can see where a lot of them are, and some of them are pretty dire. But as Larry said, and as this was Chief Simpkins' work, you know, some of this is low-hanging fruit. So, Julie, I don't think anyone can account for any misconceptions that Officer Harms might have, but we didn't tell him anything about the board having passed anything. Chief Schuld is talking about, I think, different kinds of, I can't read my next word. What were you asking about what he said, Julie?
Well, I just noted that he said something that I've been thinking about, which is some of these changes that are proposed affect small,
yes,
small groups of people, as opposed to enabling major evacuation arteries.
Yes.
So my point was, it seems like only three of these changes actually enable major evacuation arteries, and there still seems to be that this is not a top-down solution, which you'd expect in a situation like this. You would first want to define what are the routes that the emergency vehicles are going to be taking, and then decide if they go, how do we enable that? Like Beloit is a perfect example. If they'll be driving up Beloit, you know, that looks like a lot of chaos right now. So why are we focusing on these streets without having a more holistic view of evacuation in Kensington?
Actually, there is a more holistic view, but we can't do it all at once. And it's up to police to make these decisions. The school was a very important thing. It was also, as you remember from the traffic report, I'd rather they be called consultants rather than students. They happened to be students, but they were already professionals. There were a lot of other changes that could be made, but these were thought to be the ones that were most important to get to initially, partly because of the neighborhoods around the school, and also because the southeast corner of town is the most convoluted and jammed in terms of parking on narrow streets. And it's also the area from which probably more people will have to evacuate early. So yes, there are different kinds of changes. So to answer Janice's question I mentioned before, you know, if people on a cul-de-sac don't want to change, you know, if they want to do K-turns in their street and block each other from getting down to the cul-de-sac, if they want to do that, if they want to do it and delay their evacuation, I mean, that's fine. You know, that's it doesn't seem to affect other areas as much as the other streets that you're talking about. So you are correct that actually anyone at any time can ask for any kind of parking change to the county. Our residents have found, and we had our discussions on the EPC confirmed this, that people had tried in neighborhoods and got nowhere with the county. I think what happened is that because we had a comprehensive plan, we had the police on our side and the Department of Public Works, and John Gioia was very much for this, if it's what the community wanted, which is why we're talking about this now. So the concern that Gioia's office has is that he wants community input, but the way this procedure is going, we are getting community input. on everything that's going on. This is certainly not being done without talking to people. And I think it's a testimony to the effort made by the police that they're both talking to people on the streets that for reasons of danger need to be addressed first. And they're also planning general educational items for the town. So the brochure they're doing and the video that we would like the support for people to do here. We get the concerns of the Windsor residents. Yes, there are trucks that come in and they can go straight up and, you know, if there's and deal with the telephone poles, but their buckets also can reach across parked cars, whole lanes of parked cars. That's not anything different. We get the children playing, but it should be, you know, if it's important to them, you know, there can be regimes, there can be changes in instructions and habits. You know, good relations with the police, of course, everyone wants good relations. Same goes with the sight lines. I don't think these things are insurmountable, but it's not anyone's decision except the counties, really. And the police will make their recommendations. And, you know, I think that what we're asking is for this board to support the investigation of these changes and to support making a video to help educate the public to do it. I think these are simple requests.
The other thing that
I think it would be a good idea to have Chief Pagoni comment on your question about what routes are the going to take to get there. I think I know what he's going to say, but I think it would be much better to have him say it because he is the chief and I'm a retired chief or an ex-chief or whatever.
We going to take a poll on what you think I'm going to say?
It all depends, Mike.
I know. I mean, I know, and this constantly comes up, you know, people want to look for a hard, fast, this is the way something it will always be. You know, the same comes for evacuation, the same comes for how are we going to get up there or how exactly, you know, are we going to, you know, mitigate the fire? You know, and it still boils down to, it depends where the fire is at. But if we're talking about getting into the park, if we're talking about getting to the top, you know, to getting up to Grizzly Peak or getting up to Lake, I mean, let's face it, there's really only two main ways to get up there. I mean, we either do the Amherst Yale Blight, or we're going to go, well, two or three streets that'll get you up to Kenyon. Kenyon eventually, you know, you got to take a little piece of Beloit to get up to the top. Not a lot of choices there. You know, the key for us getting up on the hill is the fact that we're going to have the news. Hopefully, we're going to have the news first that there is an emergency, that there is a fire, and you know, basically that we're already going to be to the top of the hill. Other resources coming in, mutual aid from Berkeley, obviously they're going to come across Grizzly Peak. You know, so that's going to be, I mean, that's a lot of what we have to put our faith in, is that, you know, as soon as the notification comes that there is a fire, we're going to be up there already. You know, I mean, because that's where the short of those people that see smoke and decide to evacuate on their own, the decision to evacuate is going to come between a joint decision between the on-duty battalion chief and PD, of which you've got to get up there and make, you know, to eyeball it and make your decision.
Thank you, Chief Pagoni. So
I win. That's what I thought you were going to say, Mike.
Me too.
Good call, Larry. All right. I see just surprisingly one hand raised from the public. That could change. But why don't we take public comment now? Lisa Corona.
Lisa? I unmuted you.
Oh, there you go. Am I good?
Can you hear me?
Okay.
Well, thank you very much. I think, you know, the Emergency Preparedness Committee, of which I am a member, we have talked about this quite a bit. I think, you know, this has been such an unusual project in that, you know, the fire district did the study, the police district picked up the ball. You know, it's an incredibly good example of everybody working together, as Larry mentioned. And I think one of the things that's really important for our community is to show unity between the two districts on the issue of potentially saving lives. And, you know, we can talk about the details of one little cul-de-sac or another, but I think the recommendations themselves are sound, given that even the chief just said there's no way to tell you what route we're going to use to get up the hill. Getting people out is going to be one of the primary, if not the primary, most important piece of the puzzle. So I would just, I think this action is very specific. And, you know, I agree with Julie that there are pieces of it that, you know, you could take issue with, clearly. But I think the idea of supporting this in concept, the streets that have been named for evacuation purposes and the direction of the parking, to support that in concept and to then report and then following the public input and the community input, bring those things back to this board, just like Julie were saying, is what the police board is asking. So basically, a proven concept, move through that process, find out what people think, find out what the concerns are, and then report back on the things that could move forward and couldn't move forward or had to be revised in some way, shape, or form. But I think it's important for the public to understand that both the fire chief and the police chief and both these districts are extremely interested in making improvements in this community that will save lives. So with that, thank you very much for letting me share my thoughts.
Thanks, Lisa. Thank you very much. I think there is another hand up. I just have to scroll.
There is. David Spaff.
David Spaff.
All right. I unmuted you. I think you can speak now.
Yes. Thank you, Mary. Yes. I support what Lisa just said. And I think maybe one thing is maybe the wording of this action is an issue. What I think we're all saying, that is the Emergency Preparedness Committee and Larry and Kevin, is that we want to support the efforts of the police department as they start the process of trying to improve evacuation. And this is just the first step, I think, in many steps that will probably even address, Julie, your point about, you know, the routes that fire service need to be taking, as the chief has described. So I think Larry was on the right track of maybe rewording this action to really be a support effort, to support what the police are doing as they are reaching out to those segments of the community that would be affected by the first plan. So I think it's a good action to take as a first step, but it's really more of a support role that we're asking that the board take and invoke, if you will. So I would certainly would hope that you would proceed with that type of approach.
Thank you, Dave. And then there's a hand raised. Of course, no one has to identify themselves. It's a phone number, 619-851-7353.
All right. I have unmuted, I believe. I tried. There we go.
Hi. This is Danielle Madugo. Sorry, I'm on two different computers, or phone and computer. And this is weird for me to do star stuff. I just wanted to follow up on the Lisa's comment about unity. And I think that lends towards the momentum. The more people, the more both boards and fire and police, everyone who is talking about it, and will get the word out more just because more people are involved. It'll create a momentum and it'll get the community talking and more aware about some of the hazards that, I mean, they need to know about, but also start mitigating for. So I just wanted to say it makes a difference the more people who are show to support a cause or be in a supporting role for an idea to flourish within a community.
Thank you. Let's see. Looks like there are no further hands raised. So, Larry, would you repeat your motion?
Certainly. Motion as amended is that the board consider approving a request sponsored by the Kensington Police Department and the Emergency Preparedness Committee of the KFPD based on recommendations of the Traffic Evacuation Study commissioned by the KFPD to work in collaboration with the Kensington Police Department to develop parking orientation changes on 6 Kensington Street segments.
All right, we've lost Don, but is there any further discussion of this motion on the board? All right, so I think we're ready to vote. So I'm actually going to vote no on this motion. I'll explain that I think it's too specific right now. And I appreciated the comments of Dave Spath and Lisa Corona that something more general, a general notion of support to solving these problems, but giving some freedom to the police department to work on this with the community. And I think it also needs to be clarified whether we're talking about red flag days or permanent parking, because Kate Rausch's memo at the top, it says Kensington red flag parking. So I think that these are permanent changes being proposed, but it's not clear to me that that was the intent. So that was my long way of explaining why I'm voting no. Kevin.
I can clarify that we had this discussion with the police, and the police stated that they felt it would be too confusing to have red flag or Diablo Wind event or whatever. It's either all year or not. Basically, they didn't want to go with partial years, part of the year, because invariably some people don't get the message, and then are they going to be ticketed or fined or towed or what's going to happen? And that comes back to the bad feeling stuff. I don't know how firm this is, but whatever Kate says is not what's under discussion here, just if that helps you at all. I agree that we could clarify the wording as well. And I think that I would be happy to work on this with people on our committee, and we could bring back the wording to the regular board meeting. I don't have a problem with fixing that, but any specific changes that beyond what have been mentioned here, I would like to see it more a recommendation to investigate things, because I think that it was originally, when it was discussed at the meeting with Joya's office, it was framed as putting changes into effect. But I think that there has to be education. I think you have to investigate these changes and consult the community. I think that was clear from context, but maybe not so much in this particular item. I think the educational video part helps, but I think we can make this clearer. So I don't have a problem with that.
What's your vote? What's your vote? What's your vote on Larry's motion?
Well, then I will vote no, because taking your considerations into account, I think we can bring it back.
Don appears to have stepped out. Janice, what's your vote?
I will vote no, because I believe the process is underway and working well, and I don't choose to interfere with it.
Thank you. Larry?
Well, it's my motion, so I'll vote yes. I'm
got a little ambush.
Much regret. Yeah. Sorry, Larry.
I would also like to make another motion, because I see we're running short on time, and that is that the board approve the production of an educational video to be accessed on the websites of both boards, that's both the fire board and the police board, with public safety officials explaining the need for evacuation preparedness and how proposed parking changes implement that.
I'll second that.
All right. You know, we have to discuss this motion because it's a separate action.
Yes.
All right. So
since we only have 7 minutes left, I would like to make a motion that we extend the meeting by 15 minutes to 10:15.
I'll second that.
All right. So there's four of us. I will vote in favor of that. I don't think it's enough time. I don't know that I'd want to go later, but I'll vote in favor of it. Kevin?
I vote in favor of it.
Don is absent. So Janice?
I vote no. I indicated I was not available tonight, period. And I've had it by 10 o'clock.
I understand. Larry?
It's my motion. I'll vote yes.
All right, so we're good till 10:15. So Larry, you're making a motion on the production of the video to be accessed on the websites of both boards with public safety officials explaining the need for evacuation and how proposed parking changes implement that. So let's go around for discussion of Larry's motion. Since Don's not here, I'll start with Janice.
I have nothing.
All right, then over to Larry. It was your motion, but you may want to say something.
Only that this is a no-cost option. I have volunteered to edit the video, and the participants in the video more likely than not would be Chief Scholl and Officer Harms from the police department, and Battalion Chief Joe Grappolo and Chief Mike Pagoni from our fire department.
Kevin.
And we will talk with John Joya's office to see if he's interested in helping out.
Yes. If he wants to make a video, that'd be cool.
Yeah. We have a script already written.
Yeah.
Who does? I thought the police department was doing this.
Well, we're working with the police department.
All right. Well, my concern about your motion, Larry, is that I would, in order to vote for it, I would vote for it if you took off and how proposed parking changes implement that, because I feel that not enough community engagement has been done with the residents to start broadcasting about those specific changes. So I prefer, I'm just saying me personally, I prefer a bit more of an engaging approach to it, and so I won't elaborate any. I mean,
I'll be glad to amend my motion to delete the phrase "and how proposed parking changes implement that."
Yeah, I'll still resecond it. Although in the traffic report, it's very clear how parking changes will help evacuation, but you know, it's okay. Let's just get it through.
And we're not going to do a lot of editorial commenting. So if Chief Scholl decides to talk about how proposed changes will make it evacuation better, I'm not going to tell him you can't say that. But
well, I mean, the distinction is, Kevin, that the study that the folks did spoke generally about parking changes, but my understanding is that the meaning of proposed in this context is these six changes. And we've still got the people on the folks that live on the cul-de-sacs who really have a lot of engagement to do. And I have no idea how the folks on Purdue and Kenyon, and I think there's one more street, I have no idea how they're feeling about this right now.
Actually, the video is made for the entire town because there are many places in town where parking has been recommended to be changed in order to facilitate evacuations. We're not going to make a separate video for every neighborhood. Nor are the police going to make a separate brochure for every neighborhood.
Well, that's why I propose striking those last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 words, which Larry did.
Yeah, no, I seconded. I reseconded. It's fine.
Okay, and so I think that we can go for public comment about this video. And I'm not seeing any. So with the amended motion, I'm willing to, I can vote in favor of that.
Could I hear the motion stated again, please?
Certainly.
Yeah.
The motion is to the board to approve the production of an educational video to be accessed on the websites of both boards with public safety officials explaining the need for evacuation preparedness.
Thank you.
Okay, so given that wording, I'm still in favor of it. Kevin?
Yes.
Don is absent. Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
I vote yes. It's my motion.
I've seen people vote no on their own motions though, Larry. Okay, now I've lost the agenda and all this. Kevin, can you remind, which one's next?
I think at this point, we've gotten an awful lot accomplished and we're very near the end here. So I would like to make the motion so that we don't get caught in the same jam. I would like to make the motion that we adjourn the meeting to be reconvened at the next regular board meeting on October the 14th, 2020.
It's October the 15th, Larry.
I think it's the 14th, Janice.
I think it's the 14th.
Is it the 14th?
I think so. I'm double checking.
It is the 14th.
Okay, sorry.
At 7 p.m.
I'll second your motion, Larry.
Fine.
All right. Thank you. So that means we would pick up on the fourth.
7.8.6.
And on October 14th.
Correct. 7.8.6, 7.8.2, 7.8.3, and 7.8.4. will be continued until October 14th.
You know,
I'm ecstatic that we got as much done as we did.
So Larry, can you just say, so you said at 7 p.m. and that's when our regular meeting starts. I was just thinking, Mary and I have to figure this out because I think the regular meeting, so we would do this one first and then start our regular meeting because the regular meeting's allowed to start late.
Whatever the proper syntax, whatever the proper protocol.
Well, I was thinking maybe you could just drop the time. Well, if you want it to start at 7, then I think that means we do this and then we move into our regular meeting, which is
There's obviously things like the board reports. We can just combine the board report that has been postponed since September 9th with the board reports that will be are applicable to October 14th, right? I mean, we don't have to have two sets of reports from the Emergency Preparedness Committee or the CSDA or the Finance Committee. I think one report is enough.
So let's just check with Mary to make sure she's sanity checked our motion.
That's fine.
Okay, and within 24 hours, we will post notice of the adjournment of this meeting. Well, assuming the motion passes. So let's, any discussion among the board?
I have a comment. I think some of the remainder of the emergency preparedness items, I would like to hear the input of our new permanent general manager on. So I'm not sure that I'm willing to vote on all those items at our next meeting, because I doubt our new general manager will be seated then. But I would like the views of the new general manager on several of those items.
So,
well, Janice, they can always be postponed further at the next meeting. All we did is...
Yeah, I just don't want you to feel like I'm sandbagging you by supporting your motion, Larry. A couple of those items I'm not prepared to vote for yet.
I think there's going to be a lot of discussion on those items, Janice, and I share your perspective on... I share your perspective, but I think procedurally... We've got the option of putting some of them onto a special meeting because we could take that action, or just...
I'm happy with you doing it the way you're doing it now, as long as you don't feel I've betrayed you at the next meeting if I say I'm not prepared to vote on this yet without the input of a new general manager.
Yeah, well, I think that's what we'll talk about.
There's nothing actually proposed to vote on at all yet.
Okay, so all right, any further discussion on Larry's motion to adjourn this meeting to October 14th at 7 p.m. All right, that is an action item, so let's see if we have any public comment. I don't see any. So all right, I vote in favor of Larry's motion. Kevin?
Yes.
Donna's absent. Janice?
Aye.
And Larry?
Yes.
All right. Okay, then our meeting is adjourned. Thank you to everyone. We still have, just for the record, what do we have? 14 members of the, 13 members of the public, mm-hmm. and our fire chief, who I'm sure is very busy these days, and everybody. So thank you all so much. The meeting is adjourned.
All our guys are still safe, Mike?
He's muted. You're muted.
Muted.
Oh, unmute.
Oh, let's see. Where are you?
I said yes. Our OES engine came home today after 46 days, and our Type 3 is still up in Napa.
Wow.
Great.
You are still on our thoughts and prayers.
Indeed.
We appreciate it very much.
In fact, we should have adjourned in your honor. I think it's too late, but in spirit, we can do that.
That's okay, but this is appreciated.
Okay. Good night, everybody.
Thank
good night.
You.
Good night. Good night, and good job. Great meeting.
Yeah.